From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made during the throes of the Civil War, a nation torn apart by racism, greed, the fight over the institution of slavery. During those years, one man in the U.S. government stood apart, well, perhaps apart, I should say, and maybe even above all the others, in the full-throated pursuit of equality. One man in the U.S. government was an ally to African Americans, so much so that his image would hang in a portrait on Frederick Douglass's wall. I suspect you think I'm talking about Abraham Lincoln, and I don't mean to disparage Lincoln. His role in history is pretty well secured. But I'm talking about a congressman named Thaddeus Stevens. Have you heard of him? Maybe you saw him portrayed by Tommy Lee Jones in the movie called Lincoln from Steven Spielberg. Stevens was a radical Republican, and he began calling for black voting rights in the 1830s. By the time of the Civil War, Stevens was telling Lincoln that the president was moving too slowly. Emancipate now, Stevens said. Freedom now. He earned a reputation as a congressman who hated to compromise because, to Stevens, the cause of freedom was not worth selling out. He lost many friends with his style, but he earned many admirers. But it wasn't always that way. For many years after his death in 1868, Thaddeus Stevens was viewed as an anti-white bigot who wanted to destroy the American South. He was viewed as volatile, cantankerous. But the light of history is changing, and a new book argues that Congressman Thaddeus Stevens should be remembered as one of the true heroes of this country's history, much better known than he is today. Historian and author Bruce Levine will be my guest this hour. His book is called Thaddeus Stevens, Civil War Revolutionary, Fighter for Racial Justice. Levine will tell the story of this civil rights hero, and he'll connect what we know about Thaddeus Stevens to the debates over justice today. But first, did you see the movie Lincoln? I thought Daniel Day-Lewis was gripping as Lincoln. And here's Tommy Lee Jones as Congressman Thaddeus Stevens. In the scene you're about to hear, you're going to hear Lincoln begin by urging Stevens to calm down his rhetoric about what he wants to do to rebel states after the Civil War ends. Stevens has little patience for Lincoln's careful approach. Let's listen.
Since we have the floor next in the debate, I thought I'd suggest you might temper your contribution so as not to frighten our conservative friends.
Ashley insists you're ensuring approval by dispensing patronage to otherwise undeserving Democrats.
Well, I can't ensure a single damn thing if you scare the whole house silly with talk of land appropriations, revolutionary tribunals.
When the war ends, I intend to push for full equality, the Negro vote, and much more. Congress shall mandate the seizure of every foot of rebel land and every dollar of their property. We'll use their confiscated wealth to establish hundreds of thousands of free Negro farmers, and at their side, soldiers armed to occupy and transform the heritage of traitors. We'll build up a land down there of free men and free women and free children and freedom. The nation needs to know that we have such plans.
That's the untempered version of Reconstruction. It's not quite exactly what I intend. But we shall oppose one another in the course of time. Now we're working together, and I'm asking you...
For patience, I expect.
When the people disagree, bringing them together requires going slow.
Well, I don't give a damn about the people and what they want. This is the face of someone who has fought long and hard for the good of the people without caring much for any of them. The people elected me to represent them. To lead them, and I lead. You ought to try it.
I admire your zeal, Mr. Stevens, and I have tried to profit from the example of it, but if I'd listened to you, I'd have declared every slave free the minute the first shell struck Fort Sumter. Then the border states would have gone over to the Confederacy, the war would have been lost, and the Union along with it. And instead of abolishing slavery, as we hope to do in 2 weeks, we'd be watching helpless as infants as it spread from the American South into South America.
Oh, how you have longed to say that to me. You claim you trust them, but you know what the people are. You know that the inner compass that should direct the soul toward justice has ossified in white men and women, north and south, unto utter uselessness through tolerating the evil of slavery. White people cannot bear the thought of sharing this country's infinite abundance with Negroes.
A compass I learned when I was surveying. It'll point you true north from where you're standing. But it's got no advice about the swamps, deserts, and chasms that you'll encounter along the way. If in pursuit of your destination you plunge ahead heedless of obstacles and achieve nothing more than to sink in a swamp, what's the use of knowing true north?
That's a scene from Lincoln with Daniel Day-Lewis as Lincoln, Tommy Lee Jones as Congressman Thaddeus Stevens. My guest wrote the newest and perhaps most definitive biography of Stevens. The book is out now. Historian Bruce Levine, welcome to Connections.
Thank you for having me.
Thaddeus Stevens is probably best known to our listeners based on the portrayal by Tommy Lee Jones, a radical Republican pushing more urgently than Lincoln for abolition. When you go back and watch Lincoln by Steven Spielberg now, having written this portrait of Thaddeus Stevens, you know, a lot of people say they look at Daniel Day-Lewis and they see Lincoln. When you see Tommy Lee Jones, do you see Thaddeus Stevens?
Yes and no. I think it's a fine piece of acting by Tommy Lee Jones, although I have to say that it's a little odd hearing a Texas accent coming out of the mouth of a man who in actual life was born in Vermont. There are a couple things that I find jarring, aside from the accent. One is, I believe he is portrayed as much of a problem for abolishing slavery as an ally in doing so. He's portrayed, I think, in this movie as being somebody who's very stubborn in a negative way and perhaps too radical for his time. I don't think that's an accurate portrayal of Stevens. And you would never know from the movie that Stevens was one of the prime movers behind the 13th Amendment that abolished slavery. He looks instead in the movie someone whose obstinacy in pushing for too extreme equality has to be overcome in order for slavery to be abolished. But that's not accurate. A very minor note is that, of course, Tommy Lee Jones is in this movie in bed with S. Ipesa Merkerson, and that's based on a rumor concerning Stevens that he had an amorous relationship with the woman who was, in fact, his housekeeper and office manager. I've seen no actual evidence that that was true. I think in Spielberg's mind, this is probably intended as a compliment to Stevens.
I think that's probably right.
Those who formulated the rumor at the time were, of course, Stevens' enemies and opponents. So I think that the point that Spielberg is probably trying to make is that his relationship, an amorous relationship, a sexual relationship with a woman of mixed race ancestry, sort of affirms his radicalism and is a factor in making it difficult for him to compromise on the subject of equality. And it sets up this whole image of how difficult it was for Stevens supposedly to backtrack on the floor of the House of Representatives when confronted by a Democratic opponent. I think the whole scene is misconstrued, in fact, but I think that's what Spielberg is getting at.
My guest is Bruce Levine, the author of Thaddeus Stevens, Civil War Revolutionary, Fighter for Racial Justice. It is a fabulous book. I love historical biographies, especially from this era. We've done a number of them on the program, but this feels really timely. And this hour, this conversation with Bruce is going to focus on who Thaddeus Stevens was, because I think we need that history lesson. But also, we're going to be talking about some themes that really resonate today. One of them is something Bruce just mentioned. It's compromise. It's a question of where do you decide it's necessary to compromise, and where do you stand firm and not compromise? And for those who would argue that Thaddeus Stevens never compromised, Bruce's book does point out a few occasions where it actually happened, believe it or not. We're also going to be talking about what allyship means. I mean, Thaddeus Stevens is a pretty good example historically at a time where allyship, there wasn't very much in the way of white allyship. And the changing of his reputation, deservedly so, is very, very interesting to me. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation. When you go back throughout time, Bruce, when you see the way Thaddeus Stevens was written about, here was this. Well, let's do this. For our listeners who don't really know some of his backstory, you mentioned he was born in Vermont. He was born with a disability. And tell us a little bit about the history up till Congress, maybe up until the Civil War. Give us that capsule, and then we'll kind of work through some of these themes.
Okay. Well, he's born in 1792 in Vermont, not long after his parents moved to Vermont from Massachusetts in search of less expensive land. It's a farm family, and therefore greater opportunity. The place that they settle in, Vermont, is the 14th state in the to be admitted or to become a part of the Union. It's probably the most politically radical state in the Union. It is a state born in a struggle against the state of New York, which claims sovereignty in this part of the world. And New York State is politically heavily influenced by enormous landlords in the Hudson Valley in particular, who have hundreds of tenants whose lives are strongly controlled by those landlords. So it's almost a semi-feudal relationship in these parts of New York. And New York State tries to impose its own land titles on this part of New England, which would have been the most eastern portion of upstate New York. So the population of this region struggle against New York, tear itself free from New York for the sake of small landholders who want to own the land, who want to own their own small farms themselves. And part of that struggle and part of the ethos of that struggle is belief in the right also of democratic self-government. And so the state of Vermont adopts the most democratic state constitution in the country, and furthermore is the first state in the country to, in its constitution, denounce human slavery. And it's all part of a single package. And so this creates the political culture in which Thaddeus Stevens comes of age. And he lives in Vermont until he finally goes away to school, to college in Dartmouth. He's born into a family of Baptists. His mother is very devout. This is a religion that traces its ancestry back to the Puritans, and the Puritans trace their ancestry at least as far back as a major revolution in England, the one that overthrows the monarchy and beheads the king. So there's an additional source of democratic tradition in Stephen's background. And he grows up in this atmosphere of reverence for political democracy and for small-scale farm owners and their rights, and a good deal of degree of religious tolerance, because the Baptists are very jealous of their political rights to operate as an independent denomination.
What is it that leads him to Congress?
Well, he becomes a very strong believer in what we would call capitalism and what at the time was called, at least by its supporters, free labor economy. The kind of a capitalist economy that was developing in the North. And he becomes a strong partisan of that cause. It's something that reflects his own desire to get away from a very impoverished, straitened, rural life, which gives him very little opportunity for either intellectual or economic advancement. And he comes to prize the development of commerce and manufacturing, and wants to advance that interest both at the state level and at the national level. And so he joins one political party, a rather oddly named party called the Anti-Masonic Party, and eventually the Whig Party when the Anti-Masonic Party collapses, but as a member of both parties and as a representative of both parties, he is a strong advocate of capitalist economic development and a strong advocate of public education, because he believes that the government has a responsibility not only to stimulate the economy, but also to make economic opportunity widely available. And he considers education, free public education for all, an essential component of that right and that possibility.
When do we first get the sort of the inkling that this is someone who is going to become a real fighter for racial justice, willing to call for what he would call full male suffrage, etc.?
This is somebody who is clearly opposed, critical of slavery from a very early age. But it's only in the mid-1830s that I think we see him basically bringing his whole life into alignment with that principle. And so he contributes to the abolitionist movement. He supports the Underground Railroad. It seems pretty clear that before very long, his own home becomes a station in the Underground Railroad. And he takes up the cudgels against Southern states' attempts to suppress the rights of abolitionists, even in the North. And that all occurs in the decade of the 1830s, when the whole issue of slavery is nationally coming to the fore in political life.
And on the subject of why Thaddeus Stevens opposed slavery so forcefully, some of the biographers of Stevens before you had some disagreement. And there's essentially three different ideas about this. Richard Current in 1942 suggested that Thaddeus Stevens forcefully opposed slavery out of personal ambition, that he saw sort of an opening and was kind of self-serving. Fawn Brody, 1959, writes that it's out of identification with the downtrodden based on his own disability that he was born with. And still others have suggested that Thaddeus Stevens' main goal was, as you mentioned, Bruce, economic expansion of what we call capitalism. And that yes, he wanted to see all people who were enslaved free, but primarily because he thought it would expand the capitalist economy. It wasn't necessarily out of the goodness of his heart. Those are three of sort of what we heard for years about him. What do you see as the reality here, Bruce?
Well, let's start off, Evan, by examining what Stevens himself said on the subject. He said that it was especially being born into a poor family that led him to prize a degree of democracy, of rights for the downtrodden, if you will, that had sustained much of his political creed in later life. And I think that's really important. It doesn't mean, of course, that anybody born into poverty winds up with Thaddeus Stevens' politics. Far from it. But it seems to have instilled in him both a kindling desire for something more, not necessarily in his own personal wealth. Almost everybody who knew him testified that he gave very little attention to his own personal comfort and his own personal riches. In fact, was well known for giving away money at the drop of a hat, but that he believed that this was the basis not only of economic improvement for the country as a whole, but that the development of this kind of economy brought with it enlightenment, education, the development of science, and the elevation of the population as a whole. And believed, as so many did, that the expansion of this free labor form of capitalism would itself become a major engine bringing about the end of slavery. So it seems clear to me that attempting to say, for example, that Stevens fought against slavery not for the sake of the slaves, but only for the sake of the expansion of capitalism, is a fundamental misunderstanding. His hostility to slavery and his support for a free labor economy were simply two faces of the same outlook.
As he got older, you wrote that you know, he certainly grew to have very strong feelings about his Southern colleagues, that Stevens despised slavery. He despised what white Southerners often stood for. But he did say that at least they had a spine, that that at least they stood for something, which seemed to be his way of saying, you know, some of his colleagues from the North were sort of amorphous and claimed to be about rights, but didn't have the courage of their convictions. Is that fair?
That is fair. If you don't mind, I'm going to, before answering that, drop back and finish a thought.
Oh, yeah, please.
Developing response to your last question. There is one way in which Stevens' attitude toward the economy would not be very welcome to what I take to be modern conservatism. The emphasis today that's so widespread, and that we saw in particular most recently in Texas, among conservatives in Texas during the loss of power and the tremendous deprivation this brought about, the reply that one city mayor gave, you probably are aware of, it's not the government's responsibility to bail you out. It's not the government's responsibility to help you even in time of emergency. It's up to each individual instead to take care of himself or herself. That was emphatically not Stevens' view. So, for example, Stevens fights, as I think I mentioned a moment ago, for the creation of free public education in the state of Pennsylvania at a time when a lot of his constituents, very well-to-do farmers, did not like the idea, did believe that they should pay taxes only to support those institutions and those services that immediately and directly assisted them. If they didn't have kids, why should they pay taxes to support schools? Stevens emphatically opposed that point of view. He had a much larger view of the responsibility of the society to its members, and in fact pointed out to those well-to-do taxpayers that their welfare depended on the existence of a democratic republican form of government and a citizenry that was educated enough to know how to honor property rights and to respect property rights. And that view of Stevens extended to a number of other services as well. So let me now turn to your perhaps more interesting question than the one.
I think this is all interesting, Bruce, but go ahead.
Thank you.
Yeah, so Stevens did, especially over the course of his life, really kind of harden in some of these positions. And he seemed to have real opprobrium for some of his own colleagues.
Yes.
Why is that?
Yes, so you're absolutely right on this, too. Stevens despised slavery, as you said, despised the slave owners, particularly the biggest slave owners of the South. But he said more than once, on the floor of the House of Representatives, when addressing the political representatives of the slave owners, that, to paraphrase him, I have to admit, though, that I respect the fact that you people fight for what you believe in, and that you people fight hard, and you fight on with great unity. Too bad the same cannot be said for my part of the country, for the North, for the groveling, money-grubbing, knee-bending North that is constantly seeking the approval of the South and is constantly giving up its own interests for the sake of conciliating you. I wish, he said, we had more of your kind of fighting spirit.
I'm Megan Mack. Coming up in our second hour, how well do public schools teach climate change? Our guests in the special rebroadcast discuss that question and their new book, which aims to educate the educators who are doing the work of teaching climate change to students in kindergarten and beyond. The authors have some serious criticisms of what is and what is not being taught in most schools. We hear from them next hour, a special rebroadcast.
Talking to Bruce Levine, author of the new book, Thaddeus Stevens, Civil War Revolutionary Fighter for Racial Justice. Bruce is an emeritus professor of history at the University of Illinois and the author of numerous award-winning books. And this book, I will say, if you're a lover of biography, this is a little more svelte It is an easy read, and it's so important. It's a really outstanding book. Bruce, when we look at the history of how this country has viewed this man, for decades, it seemed like everybody agreed that Thaddeus Stevens was just sort of awful, that he was an anti-Southernist, that he was a bigot against the Southern people, that he was impossible to work with, that he did nothing but block things from getting done. When did this start to change? I mean, I think even JFK said some bad things about Stevens.
Yes, that's right.
What did JFK say about Thaddeus Stevens?
JFK has some very harsh words. I can't quote them off the top of my head, but in his Pulitzer Prize-winning Profiles in Courage, comes out, I think, in the mid-1950s, he basically calls Stevens something like the villainous, cruel, despotic, hatred-dominated character who made reasonable politics impossible. I wish I had the words in front of me, but they're not far from that. And in fact, may well have been even stronger than that.
So this is
and what Kennedy is expressing in that book is a view that he probably picked up in Harvard, because that was a view that had been embedded in academia, in university life, in intellectual life in the United States for many decades by the time Kennedy wrote his book.
Well, and Kennedy wasn't alone. I mean, it was historians. It was, you know, people who would have been politically opposed to Stevens in the decades after his death. So it takes a long time before the world starts to see him differently. And boy, a lot has changed in the last 10 to 20 years, especially. And I think your book seems to be definitive here. Do you feel like your biography of Thaddeus Stevens is sort of a definitive word on who this man was and how he will now be remembered?
Well, the only thing I can say is sure, but I think probably every author of a biography feels that way about the book that he's written. Whether that's true depends, of course, on what happens in the future in our own political life, because the hostile attitude toward Stevens that prevailed so long grew out of a retreat on the part of the North from the causes of the Civil War. From the 1870s onward, the North drew back from its support for the rights of African Americans, not only in the South, but even within the Northern states itself. And it's in the 1890s that the Supreme Court rules that segregation is consistent with the Constitution. And that's the era of Jim Crow that prevails down through the 1960s and into the 1970s. So I guess what I'm saying is, if the kind of spirit that we saw in the Black Lives Matter demonstrations prevails for a good long period of time, then my understanding of Stevens will probably prevail as well. If there is a reaction back in the direction of racism, then probably an appreciation of Thaddeus Stevens will evaporate.
Well, there's a lot I want to cover, a lot of ground I'd like to cover with you, and I've got notes all over your book here. So I want to hit a theme. One theme I want to hit here is the question of compromise. And as we mentioned about that movie clip in which Lincoln and in the movie Lincoln by Steven Spielberg, in which Lincoln and Stevens are sitting down and they're riffing on how hard do you push, and Abraham Lincoln is saying to Thaddeus Stevens in the movie, you know, you can't just go by true north as a compass. You have to know if there are cliffs and swamps in between you, and sometimes you have to go around them. And, you know, he's making the metaphorical point that you can't just say, this is my compass and I will always go in this direction, that there will be moments where you have to bend. And Stevens is sort of lampooning that view, because I think your book does a really good job, Bruce, of painting a nuance here into Stevens. He is somebody who wasn't a big fan of compromise, but it's not that he never compromised.
That's right.
He reserved it for when he really felt like it was the only way, and we can talk about some of those moments, in particular dealing with Andrew Johnson. But this book is not a hagiography of Thaddeus Stevens. I mean, this book exposes his warts and his, you know, sort of his eccentricities. And one of them was that he was firm. He just seemed to think that Lincoln was compromising too much, that Lincoln was giving in too much, and that it wasn't necessary. Lincoln was saying to Stevens, at least if you believe the movie, and I think at least the spirit is correct, that if we push as hard as you want, the whole thing falls apart. Who do you think was right there?
Well, I think Thaddeus Stevens was right. I think he was right throughout the Civil War in insisting that Lincoln move more quickly against slavery, that Lincoln move more quickly to uproot slavery in the Confederacy. And I think eventually Lincoln comes to believe the same thing, that he'd been too slow. One reason Lincoln is slower than Stevens is that he believes, understandably, at the beginning of the Civil War, that after all, he's only gotten in the presidential election that put him in the White House. He's only gotten something like 55% of the vote in the free states. And in order to fight the Civil War successfully, he's going to need a lot more than just Republican voters in the North to back him up. And he also believes that he needs to keep four slave states that do not secede in the Union, especially Kentucky. And so the representatives of those states make clear to Lincoln that they want Lincoln to fight the Civil War without doing very much to uproot slavery in the Confederacy. And Lincoln takes counsel with them. And so while he does sign anti-slavery legislation, he's not anxious to do that. He's not looking at the war as an instrument through which to uproot slavery. He's anxious to simply win the war, put the country back together again militarily, and then get on with the peaceful, gradual, legislative process of making life difficult for slavery. Thaddeus Stevens sees the war as an opportunity to finally move strongly against slavery and tells Lincoln that he shouldn't be listening to the so-called loyal border states. Got to say, if you look at letters that Lincoln writes by the middle of 1862, you see that Lincoln comes to acknowledge effectively that Thaddeus Stevens was right. He says, listening to this kind of counsel, this conservative counsel from the so-called loyal border states, has been the greatest factor holding me back from what needed to be done in this war.
Hmm.
And at every stage, Stevens is ahead of Lincoln. And at every stage, Lincoln, or at almost every stage, Lincoln eventually comes to take the ground that Stevens pioneered.
And then, of course, even after the assassination of Lincoln, we saw instances in which Stevens would be proven to be right. One of them, I'm reading from your book here, I'm going to read a little bit here. Stevens was much more interested in being pretty firm. I mean, maybe this is one of the reasons he had a reputation for decades as nothing more than just an anti-Southern congressman. But he wanted to be much more firm with the former rebels. President Johnson, of course, had a very different view. President Johnson sort of was assuring everyone that, no, you know, there's a different way to do this. That we don't have to go as hard as Thaddeus Stevens wants. Let me read a paragraph from your book here on what happened then. Quote, the fall of 1865 had seen white Southern voters elect ex-Confederate officials to office everywhere. Former rebel military officers now proudly wore their uniforms in the Louisiana state legislature. In North Carolina, Jonathan Worth, who had served as a state treasurer during the war, became governor. Both South Carolina and Mississippi elected unpardoned Confederate generals, Wade Hampton and Benjamin Humphreys, as their governors. Johnson pardoned both men after their election. South Carolina declined to repudiate the debts of its Confederate-era state government, and Mississippi refused to ratify the 13th Amendment. Southern delegations being sent to the 39th U.S. Congress included the Confederacy's vice president, six cabinet officers, 58 members of the Confederate Congress, four Confederate generals, and five colonels. Not even Andrew Johnson could miss the animus driving such conduct. There seem, in many of the elections, he acknowledged privately, something like defiance, end quote. That is not what Thaddeus Stevens wanted. That is not, reflective of healing. And I want you to kind of take us through two different ideas here, Bruce, if you could. What did Thaddeus Stevens want, and wasn't he born correct? Wasn't it born out that he was correct when we saw all of the prominence of former Confederates in office, et cetera? But I'm also thinking about, I hate to say it, the last month in this country where we're talking about, well, do we have to convict somebody? You know, they're not going to run for office again. Let's just move on. Let's just, you know, let's not be too hard on somebody who did wrong here. I couldn't help but read your book and feel pretty strongly that Thaddeus Stevens would have something to say about January 6th in this country.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, what Thaddeus Stevens wanted to do in the post-war South is keep the South under the control, keep the ex-Confederacy under the control of the United States Congress until such time as the Congress could assure itself that not only would slavery be eliminated in the South, but that equal rights would indeed be granted for the African-American population. And that's his North Star. Everything else about his policy toward the South flows from that. He is strongly of the opinion, and he's not the only one. There are a number of Republican senators and members of the House of Representatives, like James Ashley of Ohio and Sumner of Massachusetts, who believe that the South had taken itself out of the Union and that disunion had, in fact, occurred, that therefore it was out, the states of the South had lost the rights to be self-governing states within the United States, and that the federal government, having conquered the rebels, had the right to keep them in the status of territories rather than immediately restore them to all the political rights that they had exercised before the war. He also believed that it was necessary to keep them in that status because otherwise much of the work achieved by the Civil War, including the abolition of slavery, would be undone because the South would come back into the Union, would send its representatives to Congress and to the Electoral College, and in alliance with Northern Democrats would become the kingmakers in American politics. Aside from the fact that Southern Democrats would once again control the governorships and the legislatures in the South and impose upon African Americans whatever laws they wished to impose.
He was right, wasn't he?
Oh, I think it's pretty clear he was right. And he finds himself, in fact, confronting, after Lincoln's assassination, not Lincoln, whom Stevens, as we've said, thought was too slow, but Andrew Johnson, who was outright hostile to the right of African Americans. He himself was a former slave owner. He had endeared himself to Lincoln and the Republican Party by the fact that he had not supported secession, and as a United States Senator from Tennessee, had kept his seat in the Senate when Tennessee declared itself out of the Union. He actually had a reputation with justification for being hostile to the so-called slaveholding aristocracy. And he made some noises both during and after the South that made after the Civil War, that made Republicans believe that he was something of a radical Republican himself. What instead soon becomes clear is that while he's willing to go along with the abolition of slavery, he is not willing to do away with white supremacy. And he fights tooth and nail against every measure that is designed to elevate African Americans and guarantee their rights as citizens. And that is the basis for Stevens' ardent support for impeachment.
Yeah, and you know, so for listeners thinking, okay, so some of the lessons of Thaddeus Stevens was, first of all, he was often right, and he was not only right, but he was right to oppose any compromise. You do right of one instance of compromise that happened in, I think, 1866. There was talk about black enfranchisement, and can you just kind of give me a sense for the rare occasion where Thaddeus Stevens might say, I have to give here because this does fall apart if we don't give it all?
Well, I think if memory serves, it was surrounding the formulation of the 14th Amendment. You have
yep.
probably read my book more recently than I have. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's right.
But I think Stevens wanted language that was stronger than embodied in the 14th Amendment that passed, that would have guaranteed the rights of African Americans, including backing up their right to vote. And he tries to get that stronger language passed, and he finds that even his own political party, the more conservative members of the Republican Party, will not go along with that. And Stevens basically says, in language that we would use today, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. This measure that we've come up with is not what we want, not what it should be, not what it needs to be, but it's better than nothing. And if we don't pass this, we may get nothing. And the African Americans of the South and those whites in the South who were loyal to the Union will find themselves without the protection they need. And so one of the things I think that Thaddeus Stevens demonstrates in all of this is not only a willingness to take less than what he thinks is necessary, but also an understanding of how to make a compromise when that's unavoidable without compromising your integrity, without misrepresenting what it is that you're settling for and what you would have preferred but can't get. Because by saying what he really wanted but couldn't get, he was helping, as he had throughout his political career, to educate the voters about what needed to be done and helping them to press when times got better, when conditions would allow, for the better version of the legislation that he wanted.
Can I follow up a point with you on this? I'm fascinated by this because I saw in a recent interview you did, you were asked, you know, what would have Thaddeus Stevens thought about Donald Trump? What would he have thought about Barack Obama? And one of the things that really stands out to me about Obama is, for all of the fearful portraits of his political opponents, he was very much a compromiser. He got 2010 health care done by being willing to give up the public option. Some of his biggest right. critics said that he was negotiating against himself at points, that
That's
he
right.
that he compromised too much. But the thing that I think is very unlike Thaddeus Stevens is, even if Obama would say, I had to compromise to get health care done, it was the only way, here's what we still don't know. If you talk to Barack Obama's friends and political allies, some of them will say privately, listen, if he got his way, he would want single payer. He would want some sort of a healthcare system that's dramatically different than what we're seeing. This is the best he could get, et cetera. But if your book, at least, if this is the right lesson, your book tells us that compromise when you must, hold to your values, but still state clearly what your intentions are for the long run and for what your values represent. In other words, if you want single payer, say, hey, our goal is single payer. We can't get there right now. We're going to make this deal. It's the best we can do. We're never going to give up fighting for what we think is right. That is not sort of what President Obama's style was, very different than Stevens. Is that fair?
I couldn't have said it as well as you just have said. I think that's exactly right. Instead of saying, here's what we want, apparently we can't get it, we'll have to settle for less, but it's too bad because as a result, we're going to lose the following. We're going to have to depend, if you don't mind my venturing into 21st century politics, we're going to have to depend on these nefarious private insurance companies whose standard practice is to deny benefits, deny support, to deny claims whenever they possibly can in hope of discouraging the applicant for those claims. We're going to have to depend upon them for our health insurance system. We don't like it, but we don't have the votes to do better. But we need to get the votes to do better, and I am going to campaign for that in the future. Instead, as I think you already said, Obama decides that he can't get it to begin with, and so doesn't fight for it. To use other language, he doesn't use the bully pulpit of the presidency to help educate the public about what he considers necessary.
We still don't know if he supports single payer. You know, like, there's no way Thaddeus Stevens would leave us wondering what his position was on any sort of moral issue.
And if someone comes to us with a convincing explanation of what Barack Obama actually is for, it still doesn't do very much for the task of helping to sell that idea to the public.
And for listeners who think I'm being too difficult on the former President Obama, I'm simply comparing the offering the contrast to this historical figure written about by Bruce, our guest, in his book about Thaddeus Stevens. So just very different approaches there. In our last few minutes here, I want to talk to you a little bit about how he might see allyship today. Again, I think you're very careful, and rightfully so, to try to predict what Thaddeus Stevens would think of very many things today. I mean, the world's very different. But when it comes to the urgency of change, we had a conversation on the program just last week about policing and about seeing decades and decades. If you go back to the 1970s and 80s in our city in Rochester, you can read quotes that look like they're from last week. Oh, we need more police in neighborhoods. We need people who know each other more. That'll fix everything. And people are feeling like we have done this before. We are feeling an urgency to change now, and we don't want to compromise. We don't want to do step by step. How do you find a kind of strike the Thaddeus Stevens balance in deciding what issues require compromise and what issues require a firm stance with no compromise?
Well, if Thaddeus Stevens had been ambulatory this past summer, he'd have been out in the streets with the Black Lives Matter protesters. I think that's clear. And if he hadn't been ambulatory, he might have shown up the same way he did at the impeachment trial of Andrew Johnson, being carried in a chair by others swathed in blankets simply to show where he stood. I think the question of the murder of unarmed Black men would have been at the top of Stevens' agenda today, not to mention the question of voter suppression throughout the country and the creation of unequal voting wards and, in general, drawing voting districts in ways that disfranchise members of minority groups. Those, I'm convinced, would again be at the top of Stevens' agenda. And he had had to deal with issues like that, after all, in his own life, in his own lifetime. In the years following the Civil War, there were two major white riots that attacked Black populations in the South that helped to propel Stevens and his allies along the road that they chose during Reconstruction.
Last question for you, and we'll wrap up here, Bruce. I've really enjoyed the conversation. Is it at least your hope? I mean, everybody who writes biography, you're right. You hope it becomes the definitive work. Is it at least your hope that more Americans will know this name? Because when you see those on the street, hey, have you heard of this? Have you heard of that? I've actually seen people ask, on YouTube you can find video of people asking, have you ever heard of Thaddeus Stevens? Most people, no clue. Is it your hope that that will change?
It certainly is. I think this is one of the great heroes of American history and deserves a good deal of acquaintance, not only for sort of retrospective honor for this individual, but because of, as I think you have been emphasizing throughout our conversation, the positive example he should set for conduct today. The more people, I think, see what Stevens did and was able to do and had the courage to do, the more they may themselves decide that they too can show the same qualities.
I am glad Thaddeus Stevens didn't have Twitter, because he was already the master of the put down. I think he would have been I think he would have been consumed with some Twitter back and forth with his put downs. He had a pretty sharp tongue, didn't he?
Whoa, yes. He was the master of that. One of my favorite stories, if you've got time.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is that one day he finds himself walking down a narrow lane and comes upon a political opponent. And the opponent looks at him and sneers, "I never step aside for a skunk." And Stephen replies, "Well, I always do," and steps aside and lets the man pass.
I don't know if I should be laughing
at
that.
That's the kind of thing most of us find ourselves not thinking to say, and the next day and the next week wishing we had said.
He is a fascinating life and an important one. And the book is tremendous, and I really do think it contributes so richly to our understanding of the time. But as we've discussed, Bruce, so much relates directly to what's happening in this country today. Thank you for writing it, and thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me on your excellent show.
I should mention, you will find the book wherever books are sold. It's always a good idea to check with your small independent bookseller first. Our thanks to author and historian Bruce Levine. And I think I'm going to go watch or rewatch Lincoln now. More Connections coming up.